This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Pursuant to Standing Order 108-2 and the motion adopted by the committee on Thursday, September 22nd, 2025, the committee is meeting to study the effects of the technological advances in AI on the creative industries.
The government's AI consultation, a so-called 30-day sprint, concluded at the end of October with expectations that a strategy will emerge before the end of the year. The speed and lack of inclusivity led some to write a public letter saying they would not participate and announce plans for a citizen-led consultation next year. I did participate, both in the consultation with a brief submission and in an appearance as a witness before the Standing Committee on Canadian Heritage for its study on the effectiveness of technological advances in artificial intelligence on the creative sector. That study touched on many of the same issues as the AI consult, with robust discussion on transparency issues, regulation, and navigating potentially conflicting policy objectives. For this episode of the Law Bites podcast, I thought I'd offer up a taste of both. I'll start with the beginning of my consultation submission that raised five key issues to consider. After that, I'll play clips from the committee appearance, including my opening statement, which I should note does have a bit of overlap with the submission, and the Q&A with multiple MPs. First then, the starting point for my submission. I started by noting that too often the debate over technology regulation frames new technology as a threat, emphasizes cross-industry subsidies, and misses the opportunities that new technology presents. The Canadian approach to AI regulation needs risk analysis that rejects entrenching the status quo and instead assesses the risks of both the technology and the policy response. The government's reversal on previous AI regulatory emphases rightly seeks to engage both the opportunities and risks associated with artificial intelligence. There are unquestionably real risks, but the risk of Canada being sidelined as an AI leader may be the biggest risk of all. New policies must seek to calibrate the need for appropriate protections with a policy framework that positions Canada as receptive to AI investment and innovation. Now, how best to do that? I believe there are five key areas to consider. First, transparency, which should serve as the foundation of AI regulation. It is essential to allow Canadians to better understand where AI is being used, it's essentially transparency disclosures on AI use, how their information is being used, transparency is privacy, when their work is included in large language models, which might be seen as creator transparency, and how their results from AI were developed, in other words, algorithmic transparency. A more transparent AI system benefits those that deploy AI systems as well as those that use them. The government has a key role to play in ensuring that AI is transparent for the benefit of all. If market-based initiatives are insufficient, and the evidence to date suggests that's the case, then government should identify regulatory solutions that mandate transparency minimum requirements. Secondly, modernized privacy rules. Canada's private sector privacy legislation is woefully out of date, and the failure to modernize it places public confidence and trust in data governance in Canada at risk. The current law lacks modern concepts such as the right to be forgotten, and its weak enforcement powers, including the absence of order-making power for the Federal Privacy Commissioner, renders it toothless against large global companies who can avoid consequences for alleged violations. Moreover, the outdated rules have effectively forced the Federal Privacy Commissioner to twist the interpretation of the current law in a manner that's open to challenge. See, for example, recent findings involving Google and TikTok. A modernized privacy law that addresses the broad range of privacy law shortcomings and not just AI is critical to an effective AI regulatory framework and should be viewed as a top legislative priority. Third, digital sovereignty, not digital sovereignty theater. there has been growing emphasis on the notion of digital sovereignty in recent months, with understandable concerns about the lack of Canadian control over its networks, data storage, and the location of AI-based services. In response, many have called for AI sovereignty, which typically involves investing in Canadian-based AI services, notably including Canadian-based cloud computing and data storage. While there are competitive benefits to ensuring that there are Canadian alternatives to foreign providers, I'm skeptical about focusing primarily on physical infrastructure. There may well be value in instituting data localization requirements, also referred to as data residency, for the purposes of Canadian data and data services. However, without supplemental legal provisions, namely the creation of data governance or privacy rules that would be treated as a blocking statute by a foreign court, merely hosting the data in Canada provides only illusory protections. Virtually any company positioned to offer such services, whether Canadian or foreign, would face the prospect of complying with mandated disclosure by foreign court order. Indeed, unless Canada has the equivalent of a blocking statute, which would include significant penalties for unconsented disclosure of personal information, the result of conflicting legal obligations would likely result in disclosure of information. In other words, merely locating data in Canada through a Canadian AI sovereignty model provides digital sovereignty theater, but not digital sovereignty. Fourth, globally competitive copyright rules. As noted in my opening remarks to the Canadian Heritage Committee, the application of copyright law in a generative AI context is not clear-cut. The outputs of AI systems rarely rise to the level of actual infringement, given that the expression may be similar or inspired by another source, but it is not a direct copy of the original. The inputs, such as inclusion in large language models, is currently the subject of numerous lawsuits, but few have to date resulted in liability, since those cases suggest that LLM inclusion and the resulting data analysis often qualifies as fair use or fair dealing. Moreover, strict copyright rules could render us an uncompetitive market, undermining both innovation and creators. If Canada makes it more difficult or costly to develop large language models, AI development will shift outside the country. It's therefore essential that our copyright legal frameworks be globally competitive. That's why we need copyright laws that continue to strike a balance through effective fair dealing rules. Efforts to restrict or limit the application of fair dealing in an AI context should be rejected. Further, given the use of text and data mining exceptions elsewhere, including in the EU, the government should adopt a similar exception that positions Canada as receptive to AI opportunities. Fifth, more Canada in the training data. There are legitimate concerns about the inclusion of Canadian-centered content in AI services, including results that fully account for Canada's diversity, Indigenous communities, and languages. Addressing these cultural concerns through conventional Canadian content presence or discoverability policies, such as minimum content requirements or promotional efforts, simply don't map onto AI. Indeed, those kinds of policies could backfire, leading to the exclusion of Canadian content in large language models, which would in turn result in reduced presence in AI outputs. The answer to Canadian AI cultural relevance is more Canada in the training data. That doesn't come from more regulation, legal barriers, or higher costs. Rather, it requires transparency on datasets, reducing costly barriers to access, and the development of public AI systems that encourage the use and availability of Canadian content. The government should therefore be cautious about new regulatory initiatives that undermine policy goals of increasing Canadian presence in AI and actively support public AI systems that could better reflect Canadian values and increase user choice beyond foreign-based systems. That's part of my short submission to the government as part of its AI consultation. Much of the rest focused on some of my comments to the Canadian Heritage Committee. The rest of this episode will include both those comments as well as the Q&A with numerous MPs from both the Liberal Party, Conservative Party, and in fact, towards the end, a member from the Bloc as well. Let's start with my opening statement.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Michael Geist, as you just heard. I'm a law professor at the University of Ottawa, where I hold the Canada Research Chair in Internet and E-commerce Law. I appear in a personal capacity representing only my own views. Thanks for the invitation to appear on this important study on AI and creative industries. As some of you may know, I've appeared many times before this committee on questions involving technology and culture, including studies on copyright, freedom of expression, and internet regulation. In each instance, much of the discussion amounted to risk analysis, a perceived risk arising out of new technologies, whether digital copyright, online platforms, streamers, or digital advertising, and concerns about the risks associated with some of the proposed legislative responses, such as anti-circumvention rules, regulating user content, or blocking news links. I think too often the debate frames new technology as a threat, emphasizes cross-industry subsidies, and misses the opportunities that new technology presents. We therefore need risk analysis that rejects entrenching the status quo and instead assesses the risks of both the technology and the policy responses. The debate over AI faces a similar challenge. I think that helps explain why the government has shifted from AIDA, the former Bill C-27, to now warning against over-indexing on AI regulation, and why groups that typically call for copyright reform find themselves arguing against it before this committee at the moment. These highlight the challenges of identifying AI risk and the fear that some regulatory responses could themselves create new risks that outweigh the problems they're trying to solve. So what are the risks that I think this committee needs to think about with respect to AI in the creative sector? Three issues that often arise in this area are freedom to create, appropriate protections, and Canadian content presence or discoverability. And I think each of these presents its own challenges. First, with respect to freedom to create, AI is already an integral part of the creative process, used to assist with everything from writing to film to music. Given its importance, AI has real benefits, and restrictions on AI use are not only unrealistic, but may be harmful. The risk comes from misinformation or public confusion that can come from AI slop in a video context or poorly crafted AI-generated news. This content should be properly identified, which would enhance the value of original human creativity. There is a need to work with the relevant sectors, news, video, music, and AI services, to develop appropriate transparency measures to more easily distinguish between human-generated and AI-generated content. Second, copyright invariably arises when discussing appropriate protections. Yet in the context of AI, the application of copyright isn't always clear-cut. The outputs of AI systems rarely rise to the level of actual infringement, given that the expression may be similar or inspired by a source, but is not a direct copy of the original. The inputs, such as inclusion in large language models, is currently the subject of numerous lawsuits, but few have to date resulted in liability, since those cases suggest that LLM inclusion and the resulting data analysis often qualifies as fair use or fair dealing. So what are the risks here? To paraphrase Minister Solomon, over-indexing on AI regulation in a copyright context risks creating barriers that would render us uncompetitive as a market, undermining both innovation and creators. If Canada makes it more difficult or costly to develop large language models, AI development will shift outside of the country. It's therefore essential to ensure that our copyright frameworks are globally competitive. That's why we need copyright laws that continue to strike the balance through effective fair dealing rules. And given the use of text and data mining exceptions elsewhere, including the EU, the appropriate exceptions that position Canada as receptive to AI opportunities. Third, we want to ensure that AI services feature relevant Canadian results. But the conventional Canadian content presence or discoverability policies, such as minimum content requirements or promotional presence efforts, simply don't map onto AI. Indeed, these kinds of policies could backfire, leading to the exclusion of Canadian content in large language models, which would in turn result in reduced presence in AI outputs. Essentially, it would be a replay of what we've seen with news on some social media platforms, where there is less conventional news sources and more presence of substitutable alternatives. In other words, the answer to Canadian AI cultural relevance is more Canada in the training data. That doesn't come from more regulation, legal barriers, or higher costs. Rather, it requires transparency on data sets, reducing costly barriers to access, and the development of public AI systems that encourage the use and availability of Canadian content. I look forward to your questions.
Faris Al-Sud, a Liberal MP, was the first to pose a question to me, asking how we can navigate both the desire for protection with a similar desire for leadership on AI and cultural policy.
In the conversations we've had here over the course of this study, we're starting to see themes evolve. The one I latch onto is the following: any potential cultural policy can't just protect the past. It has to govern the systems shaping what we see and what we don't see. I've often emphasized in this committee the importance of striking the right balance between preserving and empowering our creative sectors, while also incentivizing innovation. This will resonate through my questions today as a general following. How do we build a digital future where Canadian creators, institutions, and cultural voices thrive, not in spite of new technology, but through it? With this in mind, Mr. Geist, you've previously said, and I quote, AI investment worldwide runs into the hundreds of billions of dollars, and the Canadian government contribution is never going to be more than a rounding error in total AI spending. You've long argued that our laws lag the realities of the internet economy. This has come up on several occasions already. From your perspective, how does Canada create room for itself, given obvious barriers, while simultaneously protecting our cultural and creative sectors?
Well, thank you for the question. And you're right, I've been at times critical of some of the proposals that we've seen, including here at this committee. I think the challenge, and I should preface by saying that, I think that your perspective in saying, you know, how do we facilitate innovation while at the same time adhere to some of our other objectives is the right starting point. Yeah. The challenge we face, I think, is evident even in the discussion we've had already so far. We've had a number of witnesses express real concern that the Canadian perspective, that the wide range of views and languages and ethnicities and the like somehow won't make its way in there, and so it won't be reflected in the outputs. And at the same time, we have the same conversation that says we're really concerned about when you include my stuff, because that then raises concerns about whether or not I'm being compensated. And I do think that one of the real things that we have to, as part of sort of even the broader government efforts around AI regulatory policy, is begin to sort of say, well, what do we really want to see happen here? You know, do we want to ensure that there is a Canadian perspective, that there is Canadian virtues and values that is reflected in some of the outputs? And I think the dangers in erecting barriers and saying, you know, we don't want you to use our stuff really comes at a significant cost, particularly for a committee that has been so focused on ensuring that Canada is well reflected in a wide range of media. And so when I heard Ms. Roy talk about things like transparency, credit, and choice, those, I think, are real valuable places to start thinking about transparency. And I may have a different interpretation of it, but to me, it's transparency in terms of knowing where the sources are, credit so that there's appropriate attribution, so that sometimes we do see people linking through, and choice in a way that actually does empower sites, creators, and others to say, Do you want to ensure your work is there and available in the large language, included in these large language models, or do you want to opt out? And I think at the moment, we don't have a great system for it. Just quickly to give you the example, we've long had a system in search that basically says search companies can index my content, but I can choose to opt out. Many of the AI companies are essentially relying on that same signal, the robot.txt signal, and it seems to me that that's somewhat inappropriate here. It should be the case that a site should be able to say, I want my content indexed for search purposes, but perhaps I don't want it indexed for large language model purposes. And we need systems that will allow people to make that kind of granular choice about who gets to index their content, in a sense.
Very interesting. Thank you for that. In your Globe and Mail piece, you noted that Canada faces a choice between U.S.-style deregulation and Europe's stricter rules. I won't quote you for it, but do you believe there is a middle ground?
Well, I think we are struggling to find one, to be candid about it. And I think one of the reasons for that, and this, of course, extends far beyond just this, the sort of the creative sector discussion, and it applies more broadly, is that we know that capital and individuals are mobile. And in the current environment, if we take a look at where the trends are headed, you talk about looking ahead, I think that we do run real risks of if we establish regulatory frameworks that send the signal that, yeah, we'd like to see AI here, but only on our terms, we're going to find that many say, well, you know what, we're going to shift elsewhere. And I think we've seen it sort of quite profoundly, even with respect to the EU approach, which in a fairly short period of time has gone from what some perceive to be the model for AI regulation to one in which many who believe that they want to be competitors in the AI space are increasingly wary of, because I think they have real fears that ultimately this will essentially sort of extricate themselves from some of those opportunities.
Conservative MP Carrie Diott asked whether or not some of the debate over AI regulation ran the risk of becoming a replay of what took place with Bill C-18.
Mr. Geist, I was a longtime journalist, so I've got a special interest in this regard. I believe you mentioned something about overregulation of AI could spark a replay of what we've seen happen on news sites. Something to that effect. Could you expand on that and say what the risks are?
So I think it's reasonably well known that it's quite critical of Bill C-18, the Online News Act. And I think many of the concerns that were raised at that time have played out, both with respect to the blocking of news links now for a couple of years, which hasn't entirely eliminated the existence of news. I think it's on those meta platforms. I think it has eliminated much of the quality news. And so we've seen substitutable content that actually I think has undermined the reliability of it and diminished the amount of news because, quite frankly, people are happy not to view that news. It's ultimately hurt many of the news organizations that were beneficiaries of the referral traffic and the like that was coming from that platform. But even more, I think that C-18 has also had the effect of undermining the independence of many media outlets. We've now seen even some outlets that previously were opposed to taking the Google money, saying they can't effectively compete if they don't take the Google money when their direct competitors are. And so what we've done is create a system whereby most or the vast majority of organizations are now increasingly dependent on regulatory models that result in these kinds of payments. And I don't think that is a healthy place to be with respect to where we're at. Now, I reference that in my opening remarks because it seems to me that one of the risks that we face is that if we adopt an approach that increases the cost, we basically say this, and the only way that you can include certain Canadian content in a large language model is if you meet these new regulated costs. So we're going to loop in some of these same players. We run the risk of running a replay on this all over again. Not that these companies are going to exit per se, although some might. The Quebec legislation that was just referenced, 109, I think very likely leads to the potential exit of certain streaming services given some of the demands. But especially in the context of AI, we have services that will basically say, fine, you don't, if the choice is that we have to compensate in a manner that is inconsistent with what the business models and what the global standards are, or we exclude your content, we're going to exclude the content. And that leads us to a place where many of the benefits that we've heard about this are lost, and even more, the concerns that we have about the AI systems reflecting our culture, reflecting our interests, may be lost. You have to ensure that you are in the game, it seems to me. And so we face real risks if we make choices that lead some of these organizations to say that Canada is a market that just isn't AI friendly and we can't effectively compete in this space. And we've, as I say, seen that play out, I think, with respect to C-18. I don't think we'd want to see that play out again with respect to generative AI.
Dr. Geist, who determines if AI is impartial or objective about the news it creates? Because we've heard, obviously, it scrapes news. Who determines, and how do we know that news is objective?
Well, I think people ask that same question about all sorts of news organizations, not just the AI-generated versions of that content. And so we don't have someone that reaches those determinations, but I think if you take it as a given that the majority of the public is interested in being able to access accurate news, whether that's from the original source or a summary of what is available, as we heard, by gathering up sources from a number of places and putting that back, if you end up with an AI system that consistently provides information that is found to be inaccurate or biased, I suspect that the majority of users are going to say, this is not an AI service that I want to rely upon. We've seen it play out, frankly, with Twitter's AI service, Grok, where there were a number of instances where some of the kinds of results that it were generating caused a lot of concerns. And so people then abandoned that service because they say it's not reliable. I think the market has some disciplining effect here, so that if the kind of outputs that are being generated are the sorts of outputs that people can't rely upon, if the summaries themselves don't reflect what is happening in their own community or their own interests and the like, they simply aren't going to use those services, it seems to me. And so the market plays a bit of a role, but we don't have, nor should we have, a government agency or otherwise, someone going on and checking this out to say, is this accurate or not? That's just not how the system functions.
Liberal MP Zoe Royer raised copyright issues, including the debate over an opt-in versus opt-out system. Our discussion started with some debate over notions of theft and free use.
A recent Library of Parliament report highlighted the fact that many countries are now re-examining their copyright law. The EU gives creators the right to opt out. And that's really interesting because it kind of puts the onus on the artists. Their work, the creators, their work has already been stolen. But that means that unless they opt out from having it used, it can be used freely. And we've heard from some witnesses at previous meetings on this topic talk about opting in. Opting in to have their content used. Could you speak a little bit more about that? I know, Professor Geist, you touched on it, opting out, but I'd also like to hear from Vicky on this topic. Thank you.
So I'll try to go quickly. First off, I don't see what is taking place as either theft. It's not being stolen, and nor is it necessarily the case that it can be used freely. What's taking place, certainly in an AI context, is an interest in the underlying data itself. It's not being republished. It's not being commercialized in any way where people take that original source and try to make that original available to them. They're interested in the underlying data itself. And so to the extent to which we see even these systems learning from and then generating results that are similar, I mean, musicians have been and creators have been doing that forever. I mean, they always base many of their kind of perspectives and their approaches based on what they see others doing and try to adapt and put their own unique spin on it. So in that sense, I don't see this. This is not theft in the way that we would conventionally think of as theft, nor is it free use. The uses that are used, at least what we've seen from the court so far, are consistent with what fair use or fair dealing would be. And frankly, you mentioned the EU. The EU has a text and data mining exception that specifically seeks to be able to ensure that there are certain kinds of uses that are appropriate as well for that kind of informational analysis purpose. So that's not to say that we don't need to be thinking about copyright in this context, but I'm not wholly convinced that the starting point here is to say that what's happening is that content is being stolen and then used with no limits at all. There are clear limits in the law right now under fair dealing and fair use, and the kinds of uses are not what we would conventionally see.
Liberal MP Bienvenu Oliver Natumba wanted to know why Canada is seen to be lagging behind when it comes to AI policy.
My next question is for Mr. Geist. Earlier, we talked about the United States and Europe and how they've addressed things. Ms. Guévremont has also covered this. So why is Canada lagging behind, in your view? What are we not doing? I'm trying to understand how we've fallen behind. Are we unable to decide and to legislate? When you say that Canada and the United States have issues, and Europe too, how do you feel that we should position ourselves?
Thanks for the question. Let me, I guess, start with the why have we fallen behind. I think, respectfully, the strategy that we saw for the last number of years seemed to be premised primarily on the so-called make web giants pay. It seemed to, rather than to constrain certain behavior and focus on some of the harms that might be arising, It seemed more to say, how could we profit from it by requiring payments, whether it's for the news or on the streaming side? And I frankly thought that that was an ill-advised approach. You know, I'm less concerned about this notion of falling behind. I think many countries, frankly, are struggling, whether it's in the news side or on the streaming side. I have a somewhat different perspective than Professor Guverma on some of the issues around, say, homogenization and the like. It seems to me that some of these streaming services, whether that's on the music side, Spotify, or on the video side, offer sort of just an unprecedented amount of variation and content. The amount of differing choice that we have has never been greater by magnitudes compared to what it once was. The challenge that we often focus on is then how do you find that, and how do users take advantage of that, and how do we effectively promote some of that content? And for that, there's been some fairly robust debate. But I don't think at the end of the day we need to be thinking of ourselves as how did we fall behind. Well, we need to do, and what we haven't had, I think, enough of a conversation of, and this study, I think, helps contribute to that, is what are the policy objectives we have, especially around AI? Is it that we take advantage of it, that we sort of build on the leadership that we once had on the technology side, the Hintons and Bengios of the world, that are Canadian and Canada sees itself as a leader here, and how do we build on that? Do we see this more as a threat, and so we erect barriers and say, we want to get off this train and find ways to restrict some of it? Or do we sort of, or can we carve out some sort of, it's not middle ground, but can we carve out policies that are receptive to the benefits, but at the same time, we want to ensure that it addresses some of the kinds of Canadian concerns that we have?
I think
those are many of the objectives, but clearly it's a challenging policy order.
Conservative MP Rachel Thomas reflected back both on Bill C-11 and C-18, asking how we go about getting it right this time.
Dr. Geist, I'm going to invite you to go a little deeper in terms of some former thoughts that you shared with the committee already. On Bill C-11, you outlined that you were a bit of a critic of that bill. In fact, you said, instead of modernizing the law to reflect the current reality, the government chose to retain an outdated model and penalize Canadian digital success stories in the process, end quote. With regards to Bill C-18, the Online News Act, you stated, quote, Bill C-18 has been an utter disaster, leading to millions in lost revenues with cancelled deals, reduced traffic for Canadian media sites, declining investment in media in Canada, and few options to salvage this mess, end quote. Obviously not a fan of either of these pieces of legislation and where they landed, and of course the negative repercussions that that has on the Canadian public. Here we are at the table considering a new technology, AI, and trying to figure out how best to legislate it. In your mind, how do we make sure that we do not create that same mess that was created within Bill C-11 and Bill C-18? What's that line in terms of freedom versus restriction for the sake of public safety, the public good, I guess?
Thanks. Clearly, the stuff I write, people are just able to look back on, so I got to be careful sometimes, I guess.
I didn't even use AI to find it.
Fair enough. It's not hard to find, I think. and so you're right. I was certainly critical of both of those bills, and quite frankly, I think that the concerns that were expressed at the time have been borne out. We haven't seen any money really come forward with C-11. That bill is now, the Streaming Act is now stuck in the courts. And C-18, I think, has raised real concerns at the end. There is some Google money, to be sure. Whether or not that's more than the money that was already being generated through Facebook deals and Google deals is an open question. Plus, there have been some costs. I would come back to the response I just gave a moment ago, and I think that the starting point for some of that legislation was wrongheaded. It wasn't that we shouldn't regulate in where appropriate. It was that some of the approaches around regulation really seemed to be more about how can we generate some new revenues to support in support of particular policies. And, you know, as we sort of hit a reset button, and I have a feeling, and there is this sense that there is now a willingness to rethink some of these things. The digital services tax would be another example of rethinking some of the earlier approaches. It seems to me that one of the things that we do need, and it comes back to a theme that we've now come back to on a number of occasions, is what are really our fundamental objectives here? Is it that we want OpenAI to fork over more money for some of this or for some of those kinds of uses? Is it that we want to see our culture better reflected, that we want to have the Canadian digital sovereignty better protected? And then we need to prioritize some of those things. So I think, for example, one of the biggest concerns that we have in the AI space, since it's already been put on the table, has to do with the failure to enact modernized privacy legislation. I mean, quite frankly, this is very much about data. And the fact that we have struggled to move forward with modernized privacy rules really ought to have been job one with respect to many of these issues. And one would hope that we would deal with those things. I think that we can find ways to position ourselves as leaders here without creating barriers by focusing on things like transparency, by perhaps trying to adopt a leadership position when it comes to some of the opt-out models. I didn't have the chance to fully respond to Ms. Royer, but it does seem to me that opt-out model is the right one in terms of creating efficiencies and opportunities for both creators and for the platforms, but it hasn't been implemented very well. If you're treating opt-out as this is just like search and choose to opt out of anyone finding you online and being indexed in a large or being included in a large language model, that's not the choice that we should be talking about. And so there's an opportunity, I think, to do the opt-out system truer to that notion of genuine choice with respect to large language models. And we can try to adopt some leadership there as well.
Liberal MP David Miles asked about the role of transparency.
Everybody's conversation has revolved around the importance of transparency. Different outcomes, different level of regulation, but transparency being crucial. So one thing I think we need to establish is how possible is transparency? That is a good question. But the other piece I thought, and I'm going to go to you, Mr. Geis, just quickly, because you talked about transparency, credit, and choice, but the remuneration piece was not there, the idea that it's maybe not theft. So I guess what I'm wondering is, so if it's opt-out and there's no remuneration, what's the incentive for a creator to opt in if they're not going to get paid for it or be recognized for it or credited for it? And maybe I'll ask Mr. Sutherland that question as a lawyer who represents artists, because I can't, that part I'm trying to figure out where the incentive would be.
Okay. Well, I guess I would say with respect to transparency, to me, that should be basic table stakes. And so I think we could have a discussion about what transparency ought to mean. But quite frankly, the obligation ought to lie on those that are creating these large language models to ensure that they are transparent, I think both in the way their algorithms function, but even more what is included within a large language model, so that there is the ability for those whose work is being used to know whether or not that is in fact the case. And then opt-outs only work if you have the ability to actually know if your work is being used. So it seems to me that that's where the transparency lies. I think that there may well be opportunities for payments. I think, you know, we have seen some deals cut between some of these larger AI companies and some media outlets and others. So I don't think I shouldn't be taken to say that there will be no payment. I think the market does create scenarios whereby the value of the work is such that there is real value in both being able to use it and then compensate it. We even saw around books and on authors, we've seen some settlements there as well. So I don't think that it's no payment. What I'm saying is that using the cudgel of saying that we want to try to make changes to copyright to mandate payments here and override where the existing balance is, I think would be a mistake. I think where there is real value, there will be payment. I think one of the concerns that will arise is, we've already noted that many of the kinds of things that we want to see from a Canadian perspective are smaller. They don't have as wide audiences. If we're honest about it, the economic value to it in terms of payment is going to be pretty limited. And so then the choice becomes, is it more important to find ways to ensure that it is there so that it's reflected in the outputs and that culture kind of lives on through these AI systems? Because the payments themselves maybe the work may be very valuable to the individual. Whether it's valuable to large language models who are so large that we can scarcely imagine the amount of content, that small piece of it may leave some, I think, rather disappointed.
Room for a licensing there is a place for licensing in this.
If there is a desire that the market says, you know what, I want to make use of this in a way that goes beyond fair use, and so then I need a license. Well, sure.
It would have value, I guess, because it's in the model. Otherwise, it wouldn't be used, wouldn't it?
Well, I think the models themselves value as much information as they can. Much like the debate we had back with C18, the reality is that the New York Times is more valuable than a local paper in different kinds of communities, both in terms of the output and the impact that it has. And the same would play out in terms of the inclusion in a large language model. Just because it's there doesn't mean that it's all equally valuable.
Conservative MP Rachel Thomas returned to the debate, also focusing on the transparency issue.
All right, Mr. Geist, coming back to you. One of the illustrations that Dr. Kearney painted for us, which was really helpful for me around transparency, was this. She explained how, you know, as a photographer, so she does photography on the side, she might take a picture of a sunset, and then she might, make a few changes or some edits to that photo. She is the original artist. For her to be able to identify what influenced those changes that she made to the photo would be impossible, because which of the 10,000 sunsets that she's seen impacted those decisions she made? Who knows? In the same way with machine learning, you have 10,000 inputs, and then on top, that's original inputs, let's say. And then on top of that, every new output becomes a new input. So every millisecond, or even faster, we can't even compute it in our own human minds, you have this effect of just amplifying information or producing more and more and more. In the spirit of transparency, if you were to create a footnote with that information, all the possible information that the machine could have pulled from in order to generate content for you would be insane. So how do you develop transparency around such a model when you don't actually know what content was drawn from to begin with?
Thanks. That's a great question. I'll try to respond this way. It seems to me transparency, and this picks up on the earlier conversation as well, transparency can include a number of different things. It can include, and it's where I actually thought you were going with the photographer example. It could include the fact that I used various AI technologies as to supplement the work that I created. Now, it's my creation, and I feel comfortable using AI in that context, but there's going to be a spectrum there, too. And at some point in time, when does it become more AI and less me, and do I need to disclose? That's something in an educational context we're grappling with quite regularly, because students like to use AI, and we want to ensure that the work that they're generating is their own work, even if they are using AI for different purposes. We all use it, whether that's for some of the more mundane things, or spell checking and grammar, but sometimes much more. In terms of the generative AI sources, there's the inclusion in the large language model. So to come back to the notion of, am I even there? Are you using this at all? So that if you had, say, an opt-out system, there's that ability to identify it's there or not. Then there is that next level that you're talking about, which, tell me how it is you got the answer that you got. And you're right. How am I getting this answer right now? It is a result of sort of lots of study and thinking about different issues and just the moment of, okay, how can I best deal with this issue? So I don't know that the expectation should be a 10,000-point citation that hears all the various inputs that went into that output. We recognize that in our everyday lives, there are lots of inputs that come into where ultimate output is. But I do think we're starting to see with some of these services, we already see with some of these services, sort of the answer to your question, which is, people want to know what is the core sources for some of the more notable claims that are being generated through a generative AI source, right? And in some of the earlier versions of ChatGPT, it did not include that. Microsoft actually provided a version of ChatGPT that included citations that you could then click through, and the original version of ChatGPT did not. We've seen a shift because I think, quite frankly, the public, when using these services, wants both the ability to dig deeper, which frankly is good news for news organizations and otherwise, because it tells us that people will still want to see some of the original sources, and that there is an ability for these services to answer what is the fundamental question, not what are all the 100,000 or 100 million tokens that went into this answer, but rather what are some of the core sources that I should know about that may allow me to better understand how it is that you're arriving at this particular response. And to me, that's important transparency.
It doesn't have that.
Well, I think that in many instances, it will have a lot of that. If there is no answer, then that speaks a little bit to the credibility of the answer perhaps too. And so that I think that one of the things that we see and will see more of is that to the extent to which there is at times some skepticism about the answers that this generates, is it being hallucinated? Have they canvassed the right sort of things? In the legal world, a lot of concerns about made up cases known as hallucinations, and you can't rely on that when you're developing a legal paper or an argument. And so there are demands to better understand how these things are being arrived at. And if the service isn't able to provide you with effective responses, I think that actually undermines, in the view of the user, some of the value of the service itself.
Finally, Bloc MP Martin Champoux asked how we can ensure that Canada doesn't disappear from the very AI systems that we've become increasingly reliant upon.
A quick question for Mr. Geist. We have legislation like C-11 and C-18. They've been raised today, and of course, we have different opinions. Now, when it comes to AI, Mr. Geist, well, I'm still very curious. I haven't made up my mind, and I don't know whether regulation would be effective because the AI universe is constantly evolving at a rapid pace. The businesses we would attempt to regulate are, as you know, businesses which are, in fact, bigger than some states. So I am wondering, how can we guarantee that we don't disappear in the cultural ocean, which is largely dominated by American culture? Is there any way to protect ourselves with a carrot rather than the stick, with incentives rather than deterrence? We want programs to support artists in using AI. Do you have any opinions on this?
Well, I guess I'll say a couple of things, and it came towards the very end of my opening remarks. I don't want it to get lost, but I think the value of what's often referred to as public AI, the notion that these large language models should not be the exclusive provenance of these large tech companies, that there is the ability to create large language models that better reflect some of the kinds of values that you're talking about and could be readily used by anyone. And so the way that we ensure that we don't get lost is to show up. And the risk that we face, I think, if we establish systems that sort of say we want to erect large walls here because we're concerned about some of the potential negative impacts, I think in some ways may accelerate some of those kinds of negative impacts. So I think it's about showing up. I think in response to that last question about who ought to be around, that's also part of the answer. We need to ensure that this is a dialogue that is as broadly inclusive as possible. And one of the concerns I would have, quite frankly, is that, you know, the government, Minister Solomon, has set up the so-called sprint of 30 days of a public consultation with 26 people on a strategy board that is not broadly inclusive, does not reflect many of the kinds of perspectives that we're talking about. And so if you don't establish systems and a consultative process that, frankly, this committee has done a better job of trying to bring in those perspectives than the Minister of AI has, that's a problem if what you want is outcomes that reflect all the kinds of perspectives that have been brought to bear over the last few weeks.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at LawBitesPod, or follow Michael Geist at MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron-Leboy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.